Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello and welcome to SETI Alpha 3, a Star Trek podcast. I'm your host for this week, Daniel Prue, and joining me as always are my two castaways, Darren Moser and Philip Gilfus. Darren, how are you doing today?
I'm doing well. You know, I just got off of the jogging track that we actually had installed out here by the trash site, and I have my, you know, CA3 t-shirt on. It was a lot of fun, you know, making that. But no, I feel good. I'm ready to eat something. What do you think I should eat after this run?
Chocolate. I hear chocolate is very, very
okay.
Good,
you've convinced me. I blind faith. I will go with a chocolate bar.
Do the SETI Alpha 3 t-shirts? Do they just say SETI on the front to be trendy or hip?
They try to be as hip. It's actually in binary. It's just a smattering of binary code. So if you don't even know, if you have to ask what it says, Daniel, then you're not ready to know.
Fair enough. That's fair enough. And of course, joining us as well is Philip Gilfus. Philip, how are you doing tonight? Chirp, 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 chirp. Philip, wait a minute. Darren, did you check the tardigrade cage recently? Have you fed him?
It was your turn to feed the tardigrade cage.
Oh, God, this is really awkward. So Philip may not be joining us tonight, but who we have is even better. Sorry, Philip.
But it's true.
Joining us, we have the lovely Charlene Schmidt. Charlene, welcome to SETI Alpha 3. How are you doing?
Oh, thank you so much. You say whatever you want about Philip, but I adore him.
We do.
I'm not better than him. And now that you got me so hungry, I'm thinking, is it okay to eat on this podcast? I know that's really bad podcasting behavior, but I could really seriously go for some green juice and burritos with salsa right now.
Well, it has to be roasted tomato salsa, but yes, you can have that.
If you insist. Fine.
Yeah, I don't know. So for a good chunk of time, my roommate liked to cook, and I'm more of a fast food, whatever I can get to my mouth as quick as possible kind of guy. So his big joke was that he would have to smuggle vegetables into my food, like he would put spinach in the burgers that he would make and stuff like that.
They have books about that.
I feel like I feel like Michael was being a little passive aggressive about the food situation at the replicator. I don't know how you guys feel about it, but like, let Tilly order what she wants, man. Come on, she just ran around that ship.
Yeah, like, is Burnham Tilly's fitness coach now or something? Is this a part of their mentorship
coach,
and menteeship? Yeah. I don't completely understand. But you know what? That replicator, this helpful nutritionist replicator telling me what has antioxidants and stuff, not necessarily helping. Like, I almost feel like it's sort of like the paperclip in Microsoft Office, you know, the old versions. It looks like you're about to order
Clippy.
A burrito. Would you like to make sure you get more protein in that?
No, I don't.
No.
No,
I want crap, and I want it now.
Now I want the computer of the Discovery to be like an emoji
tasty.
Or something that emotes as it talks to you. Now I need to see that.
So, you know, we've actually already mentioned a number of topics, but just to bring the audience up to speed here at this point, we are talking about Discovery, the episode six, believe it is. And it is called, we kind of talked about this before the show, it's called Lethe or Levy or Levy. It doesn't matter. It's called L-E-T-H-E.
Only they could pronounce the episode title in the episode and we wouldn't have this problem.
That would have really helped, right? And this is the one time that they don't.
Yeah. So at first I thought it was lathe, but then obviously it's not the case because that's an A, not an E. Truly, the title doesn't matter here, although it probably does in some significance, but I don't really know the true meaning of the word, so we're just going to gloss over the title and start to talk about the episode. Let's just dive in with kind of general thoughts. And Char, since you're our visitor, why don't you start? What did you think overall? We can get into the nitty gritty later, but you think it was a good episode? What did you like? What didn't you like? What stuck out to you in your brain?
Well, while I could watch it, I was one of those people that was having trouble streaming Star Trek Discovery on CBS All Access last night. And for those who have semi-recent memory, if you're watching this or if you're listening to this in the future, I apologize, but the streaming was not terribly good last night shortly after the episode was released. A lot of complaints on Twitter. It would play for a few minutes, buffer and buffer and buffer. We ended up quitting the app, restarting it, and just getting through it that way. Killed the suspense. So I watched it again today, got through it just fine. And so now I can say with some very certain honesty that I like this episode. It has some really intense character growth, which I'm a huge fan of. I really adore that. So that really got me. There are some things that bother me a little bit, and it's not my favorite episode thus far, but as the story keeps on building, I am more and more interested. I keep saying that every week, but with each passing week, it is just that much more true. We're getting involved, right? So that's my thoughts. How about you guys?
Yeah, it's definitely a character episode. I mean, it's going into backstory. It's pretty much actually all focused on their history, which I remember when Discovery started and we're like, what kind of episodes should we expect? And, you know, and the fact that this feels very much like a traditional Star Trek episode as far as, oh, this is obviously the, you know, Michael Berman and Captain Lorca A plot, B plot. Like, it really felt like that A plot, B plot traditional Star Trek. I'm not saying in a bad way, just it very different from the, I feel like we had this pilot that was, you know, new Star Trek and new television, and not in a bad way, but we're kind of slowly transitioning into a more formulaic feel. But yeah, lots of great things to get. Daniel, I took the liberty of looking up on the internet for Levy Leafy Lathe, and in the classical Greek, the word means oblivion, forgetfulness, or concealment. And apparently, I know we'll get to it later, but you know, there was a lot of that going on in this episode. So another apt title.
We have to assume concealment, I think, and it is both Sarek's concealment of his little secret as well as potentially Lorca's secret of his mental health state, I guess.
Is going on there, we don't really know for sure.
I don't know
yet.
Is what's
know
the triangle in the line? Like, why is it? Why that? That seems a very weird scar.
Yeah.
Oh yes, the triangle one was very strange. Okay. Well, I was actually torn whether we should talk about Michael's story or Lorca's story first, but let's touch on Lorca's story because. To me, it was more interesting. I was actually more frustrated with Michael's story, but we'll get to that later. Lorca, man, I still can't pin this guy down. No idea. Okay. So,
right?
I want to ask you guys, what do you think? At the end of the episode with the Admiral, we can get to the earlier stuff afterwards, but what do you think? There's maybe a little bit of an idea planted that this wasn't, I don't know, that he kind of in some way planned or pushed for this to happen. This whole thing at the end with her and the Klingons and stuff. I think he saw an opportunity and saw the potential for what may happen.
I don't think he
happen.
Instigated it. I think he took the next step seeing the direction it was going. I don't think he obviously didn't set up Sarek being bombed, but
yeah, right.
it was just, it was a fortuitous. You know, I do believe that he extracted Michael Berman and got her on his ship. I do. I mean, that's fairly clear. But
we established he definitely did that. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't think he has quite. Well, one, the situation was still developing that he wouldn't have any time to set anything in motion because it's literally like a couple hours between, you know, the conflict between him and the Admiral and she's now heading off towards to meet the Cylons, and that's not
gonna go. Wait a minute, the what?
Well, it did. It was just very reminiscent of, you know, the new Battlestar Galactica, where they have a little station that the Cylons and the humans meet once a year or whatever. And that's how it kicks off. Like, the envoy goes and the Cylons bomb it and destroy it. And that's, peace is over. So I mean, nobody was surprised by the events of the end. Like, we could kind of all feel that coming a mile away. Things were not going to go well for Admiral Takes Officer Badge.
I like that name. Yeah, I knew pretty much that was going to be the end of the Admiral. She's not dead, but she's so very dead. Is she not?
I mean, the only reason they would not kill her is if they want the conflict to come full circle and Lorca has to choose, if I save you, will you have to basically promise not to kick me off my ship. Like, that's if they do.
True, leverage.
That's it. Yeah, he has that leverage, but I don't know if that's where they're going to go, but.
I hope they don't go there, because it feels easy to go there.
I'm not saying they could, yeah.
I agree with you. I can see it being a thing. So far, they've kept me on my toes about Lorca, so I'm still really not sure. Even after this episode, I'm like, okay, here is a desperate man now who wants to keep his ship, and technically hasn't done anything wrong to preserve. I don't know. It's really, really strange.
He lied on official Federation forms, okay? He used the blue ink instead of the black ink, and he's just out of here.
Before we, I just want to mention one thing about the actual meeting of the Klingons and Admiral, I was going to say Cartwright, but that's not right. oh, God, I can't remember her name. Forgive me, I never remember names. But the Admiral and I think probably the hidden superstars of this episode, whatever those species were in the background that I didn't even realize were people, like they were aliens that the Klingons just cut down in the middle of that thing. I thought they were so cool looking, and I wish we knew more about them or whatever. I was just very interested in their...
Her name is Admiral Katrina Cornwell. So you were close.
Cornwell, that's what it is. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyways, I just wanted to mention that I really liked the alien design of these three hooded figures, like real tall hooded figures in the background. So what do we think about Lorca at this point? What did we learn? Well, we learned that they had a previous relationship. And we learned that he is, well, we already knew he was manipulative, but we've learned that he's a broken man. Well, we already knew that too. So maybe nothing? Did we learn nothing this episode?
Well, I think we learned that on top of whatever has really broken this man, he is also a desperate man now, which is going to turn the tides. He has not technically crossed the line yet, but maybe this is the point at which that's going to change. I did find the relationship between, I think it's Cornwell is the admiral's name you're looking for. so she plays psychologist with Lorca a little bit and gets a little far. And then he starts to put the moves on her a little bit, liquors her up a little bit, puts a little bit of sexy time in there. She
falls
for it. That's
quite a line he gives. I mean, that, like, does that line actually work? I could think of a better use of the time if you're game. It's basically
he wasn't very subtle. I will say that.
No, now, okay, granted, they have this relationship, whatever past that they have. But if she is suspicious of him, she's falling for this. I mean, does she not? She knows that he's trying to distract her, if nothing else, right? So, actually, does she not admit later that it really was a lure? Like, she knew that? So why does she go along with it is my big question. Because
it's war, and you take what pleasure you can, because war is hell.
And
maybe, maybe she's just getting what she can when she can. Maybe that's just it. So, okay.
I was also thinking, too, that she may have been using it as an opportunity to study him as well. Because she mentions later, she's like, this is not how it was before. This is different now.
No, and you're right. Mm, yeah. So, there's a lot going on here. Like, at first, I thought this is just the concern for, like, him as a captain. You know, we've seen these kind of conversations
before. An old friend. Yeah.
But then it got personal, and then it just confirmed what I felt about Lorca all along, that there is something so deeply scarred within this man, and we don't know what it is yet. What horrible thing did he do? And now with desperation, man, I'm waiting just for everything to come unhinged. However, with that phaser in his back pocket and little hints that, yes, the mirror universe is coming, I'm wondering, which version of Lorca is this that we see in that shot?
You know, I actually got the same feeling. I actually mentioned that when they the last shot, when he's standing in front of two windows and his reflection is only coming off of one. And I'm like, okay, is this a mirror thing here? Is this what we're doing here? I still don't know.
Yeah. I mean, it's a very mirror universe tactic to lure people with liquor and sex. So
yes,
that would actually be a little bit of a giveaway if you're really paying attention, but it could also just not. So we got to learn more.
Yeah, I vote that he's not a mirror Lorca. I feel they've invested too much into his backstory to just reset button, which is basically what it would be, because it's like saying this is not who you're thinking it is. But I do think, though, that the writers are like, we know our Star Trek fans, and if we give them these breadcrumbs, again, we're now in an era where people are going to be analyzing live Trek. And I'm not saying that they're like trying to manipulate us, but it's just, yeah, you could sow seeds of the mirror universe. And this is great. We have discussion like this. Is he from the mirror universe? Is he not? Like, we're actually having this kind of discussion because of those little tiny hints that they're putting in. And I don't think I wouldn't feel cheated at all if he wasn't a mirror universe. I feel if he was, I feel like he would be slated to not being on the show very much longer, which I don't want. I want him, you know, on the show. I feel like really at the end, the best lines for me at the end was when, you know, his voice doesn't crack, but it gets really close where you can see the desperation and he's like, don't take my ship. It's all I have left. And with Lorca, he's been presented to us, and he's been probably one of the most controversial characters of this show so far. He was presented really, we just saw the facade. We saw the, I have it all together. I'm getting what I want. I'm the head of this ship. But now we're seeing the behind, you know, who he actually is, the man behind the mask. And you know, we're not going to talk about masks. It's okay, Daniel. I'm moving on. But, you know, we're actually seeing the real Lorca. And I think as a person who's gone through and made terrible choices and done terrible things in the name of war, and, you know, I think that just makes him a more interesting character. And he's the captain, so he has a ton of power.
Yes, and he's very good at putting on that front. That I have got it together. I am the leader. I am in charge. This is fine. Everything's fine.
Well, Saru is number one. You know, Saru would be all over him if he suspected that he didn't have it all together. Because that's
right?
Saru.
So if he's tricking Saru, which that has been something I've been wondering about this whole time, is how is Saru just not completely freaking out over this guy? So we've got a master manipulator here. We've got, I think, somebody who's very, very skilled at what he does, but also very freaking messed up, like maybe sociopath level here. That's dangerous.
It is so interesting. Yeah, Lorca constantly is my, you know, anchor in the show, because he is the one that I'm like, what is going to happen with this character?
I think Lorca's the new Data.
What's that?
I'd say Lorca's the new Data, as far as, like, Data was that one character that's not the main character, but it's the breakout character, at least so far. I mean, Michael is obviously the main character, but, and I'm not saying we're trying to view humanity through Lorca, but I'm saying that he's the one that everyone's talking about.
He definitely has, he has the hooks, and I think it's telling that they haven't had him cross the line. I mean, we've seen him go up against the line every episode, essentially. And he still hasn't. What sticks out to me, there are two moments with Lorca's story that stick out to me in this episode. The first is when she mentions what happened with his previous ship. And that's when he gets all dodgy and weird. And, hey, by the way, I happen to have this jazz music and this bottle of champagne.
That's so very true. That is when he puts in that distraction. He does not want to talk about that.
And then The other moment to me is when, at the end, when Michael's saying, hey, you know, thanks for being my captain. You are super awesome. And you can almost see the regret leave his, like, he's just like, I don't deserve this praise, but like, this is what I want to be. So I still feel like his cause is noble, but I just think he is an ends justify the means kind of person. And it's a very weird gray area for someone in Star Trek, especially a captain, to be without being an all out villain. And I think the writers can go both ways with this. I think we could see the beginnings of, you know, a villain in Star Trek, or he's going to like try to redeem himself in the end. But it's so interesting to ride this middle line throughout this show and just be like, I don't know. What's he going to do?
I think when we find out what it is that he did a few months ago that we've been referred to so many times, when we find out what happened, that's going to create such an interesting conversation, I think, for all of us, because did he do what was right? Did he do the best that he could at the time? Like,
there's more to that story for sure.
You know, I think once we know what that is, we will understand Lorca so much more. But until then, we're just here talking and speculating. We don't have anything besides theories, and we could be completely wrong. We could be spot on, and that's going to be such a moment. We don't know when it's coming, and man.
And it's interesting.
I'm frustrated just thinking about it. Yeah, but it's going to be an explosive thing, just because I think that's going to bring out a lot of the intellectual Star Trek isms. You know, like, what is Starfleet? What isn't? Is there hope? Isn't there? You know, it's going to be just, I think, crazy. It's going to be a breakthrough moment.
I liked his one line that stuck out to me as very Star Trek-y in a way, was when he was talking with Stamets. Again, I'm terrible with the name. Stamets and Burnham in the Spore engine room or whatever. And he says...
Spore engine room. I like that.
Yeah. And he's and they're talking about... you know, this mind meld stuff. And he goes, you know, we don't have time to deal with the metaphysical implications of this. And I'm like, ah, okay. All right. You know, he's considered them, but he
also
doesn't
Stamets
want to deal with it
as high as a kite at this point right now. Cause he's
we should talk about that. But yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Well,
that
one last
dude
point
is on cloud
nine. I wanted to touch on though, Daniel, is you said that Lorca was towing the line and going up against the line. And it made me think it's interesting that the one moment that a captain crosses that line technically is with the tardigrade, and Saru is in the seat at that point. Like, would we be having this conversation?
And we've not seen the
about
aftermath
Lorca
of that. You know, this series so far has not done much of a job of dealing with trauma yet, and so I'm waiting for that to happen. We do need to see Lorca maybe processing whatever it was that he did. We need to find out what is going on with Ash
and
Tyler.
And Lorca's now
too.
Got a good friend. Yeah, with Ash Tyler. That's,
yeah, I mean,
you could tell
he
that's
was
his new
a prisoner
one.
And subjected to torture and all sorts of horrible things. You need time to recover from that. But it's so strange because he also, like Lorca, looks like he's got it all together. Everything's abso-friggin-lutely fine. He doesn't have a scratch on him. BS.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting for that to hit.
It is true, because he's not only like is he like looking like he's all together in this episode, he's played as kind of the moral center. Like, he's played as the one that is like, he, you know, not just in general has it all figured out, but like, he hasn't gone through this terrible traumatic experience at all. I agree. There's definitely something going on with Ash that we're not aware of yet.
Yeah. Definitely.
You have the
yeah.
command people are like, we want to promote you, and you have the women like falling all over him, air quotes, you know, so he, he's positioned as this character that, like you said, has it all together, and nobody has it all together in the Star Trek Discovery universe. Nobody. So
no,
it's
and
coming.
Especially this guy shouldn't. So there's a lot more to that going on too that we don't know about.
No. We'll talk some more about Ash, but I think maybe now would be a good time to jump over to Michael's story, and well, the Michael / Sarek storyline here, and. I didn't care for it. I got to be honest, not my favorite. It seems to be that I'm in the minority here. Maybe you guys feel differently, and that's okay. Real quick, I'll just state my issues, and then you guys can go off from there. I've always been kind of uneasy with the whole, Man, I wish they had a last name so I could make this easy. I was going to say Michael Spock, but that doesn't make any sense. Michael House of Sarek thing. It's always kind of been like, why do we need to try to fit her into this? Why couldn't she just be someone else? Which is fine. I kind of was okay with the reveal here that Sarek essentially sacrifices her place in the Vulcan Expeditionary Force, is what I think they call it here, for Spock, who ultimately just rejects it. So Sarek is just kind of all sorts of screwing up, which is not surprising. We've kind of always known Sarek's a terrible father.
he's made some horrible decisions, yes.
So at least they're keeping that character trait consistent. I'm still iffy on the whole interdimensional Katra connection stuff. That seems like it's just been added towards this point. I don't know. It was okay. There was some neat character development there, like the twist that it was like a Sarek trying to be protective of both of his quote-unquote children. I get that, and I appreciated it, but wasn't my favorite thing. But I'll let you guys go. Tell me what you think of this whole Sarek, Michael, her father, as she says, relationship here that's going on.
I think I liked it a lot more than you did, Daniel. I love character development, and I felt like this actually integrates a lot more of Michael Burnham into the House of Sarek life, as you called it, where, hey, we get a name drop, Spock. We acknowledge that. That's great. We see Amanda. That's cool. And we see Vulcan. And how about those CGI matte paintings? Vulcan looks awesome. I want to go.
Yeah.
Looked really nice.
It looked really good.
And yeah, that, I don't know. I feel like this gives us a little bit more backstory with Sarek and Michael, their relationship. It's, of course, very complicated because, as you said, with Sarek, he certainly had trouble with Spock. We knew that. And apparently he made a horrible decision with Michael, too. If I were a father, I honestly don't know what sort of a decision I would make. I can't really judge him for that. I'm not trying to say he was right or he was wrong, but it is very interesting that Spock ultimately decided to join Starfleet, and so Sarek's decision was completely for naught anyway. And yet he gave Michael a horrible mental scar that she's been dealing with all these years now. That is kind of a horrible thing to do, and they need some therapy for sure. I think this whole crew, they need a counselor ASAP.
Where are the
man.
Counselors? Where are they?
Where,
now,
yeah,
Char.
We need counselors on ships ASAP right now, and I think Discovery needs about five.
I got Deanna Troi on the line. Let me call her up right now. I mean,
we need the trauma
Let's
hotline.
Let's get Ezri over here, everybody.
Now, I don't want to insinuate, too, that there's a little bit of forgotten middle kid syndrome going on here, but if we can assume that Cybog exists somewhere in between Michael and Spock,
uh-huh.
He wasn't even mentioned. Why didn't he get the opportunity to join the
he's the laughing black sheep of the family. They knew he wasn't going to Science Academy.
Yeah.
was going to clown school and he was gonna like
he's
it.
He's going to Vulcan Community College. Let's just put it
Hey,
out
don't
there.
Insult community colleges.
Hey, Vulcan, I said Vulcan Community College, okay? That's like Harvard, okay?
That's true. I think more likely that he joined a commune somewhere. He seemed kind of like hippie-ish and,
he went off the reservation.
He went off the grid for a while. Anyways, Darren, what did you think about the whole story?
Yeah, again, I was much more interested in the Captain Lorca storyline, but I also enjoyed, again, the technology aspect. I liked the kind of artificial mind meld thing with the three different like hexagons that would obviously be like the fingers. I'm like, okay, that's actually really cool. And apparently something that any doctor has in their medical toolkit, but, piloting, piloting into the nebula. And I mean, you always feel, one of my fears for Discovery was that instead of, boldly going where no one has gone before, being the mantra, it was going to be Carl Urban's line from Star Trek 2009, like, space is disease and death wrapped in darkness. And I'm like, I don't necessarily want that kind of a space. And I feel like Discovery has instead kind of towed the line and had a nice balance. Like, Yeah, when they're in the nebula, you're like, we should not be here. This is dangerous. Like, we could have a problem. Whereas, in like, to comparison to like next gen, I never felt when they were going somewhere that anything bad could. I mean, yeah, things bad things could happen. You know, Geordi doesn't have good vacations, but you know, I don't feel like space is gonna kill them. It's like it's aliens. It's man versus man, not man versus nature. That's, I guess, what I'm saying. They've introduced space as a man versus nature. Space can kill you while you're trying to travel through it. Space can try to kill you, you know, just because kill your loved ones. You know, he basically went into a storm with a bomb. But anyway, but I guess I was focusing more on, you know, the technical aspects, and they seem to. I did think it was kind of interesting how, you know, in the Battle of the Binary Stars, Berman, you know, is saved by half a force field, and the same thing happens to Sarek. Apparently, inner ship force fields are the way to go, like, you know, cordon off portions of your ship. But, yeah, just, and again, I liked how they displayed. I mean, they're doing a good job of show, not tell, because this could be something very difficult. It's interesting because it is a flashback, but in the way they're doing it, it's not a flashback. It's this, you know, frequent fire mile Katra, you know, mind meld that's going on. And, you know, it's very Matrixy if you think about it. He's like, hey, you're jacked into my mind. And then he, you know, gives her a kung fu move and she goes, I got kicked out, you know, dial again. Like, it's basically very Matrixy. But
it'd be visually, there were a lot of martial arts cool. going on in that.
There was. I was just going to say, last thing I'll say is I did like how, you know, Michael brought in Tilly. She's like, I want, you know, and, you know, Cadet mm-hmm. Tilly. And, yeah, you could tell she was very excited to be standing next to the captain. She's like, yes, sir. You know, I'll do my best, sir. And I think, again, we're seeing a lot of the main players. I mean, pretty much every main character except for probably Saru really got some screen time. Not that you can have everybody, you know, in, but I could feel like, you know, Tilly, you know, Michael, Lorca, and new guy, is it Ray? Ash Tyler. You know, we're really starting to get into these characters. Again, overall, it's just a character-driven episode for sure. And almost a bottle show, if you could really call it that. Like, they don't really go too many places. Nothing super. They're kind of dialing back the special effects for a little bit to not overdo it.
Yeah, I don't know if it would be exactly a bottle show, but this is the closest thing I think we've had to it thus far. In part because I think maybe it is so character driven. It's a lot of scenes of people talking, and yet, like you said earlier, it's a lot of show, not tell. It's not people just blah, 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 blah. Things are actually happening. It's moving, which is very nice because sometimes Star Trek has struggled with that. It really has. Can we take a moment and talk about Vulcans at large? Like the fact that there's suicide bomber Vulcans out there who really hate humans. I mean, there's a lot of human prejudice going on in this episode. And no, that's not anything new. We'd certainly learn that from Enterprise, if nothing else, and how speciesist Vulcans are toward humans, that they consider humans inferior. But man, if you didn't know that before, you sure know it now.
Yeah.
Okay. My biggest issue with this episode by far was the term logic extremists.
Your logic is too extreme, Daniel. Too extreme.
Oh, man. I believe that A equals A and that A is not B. So hard. I believe it's so hard. No, there are so many other terms that they could have used other than you could have literally just said extremists. You could have said racists or xenophobes or isolationists. There are plenty of terms that you could have used other than logic extremist. That is it's the stupidest term Star Trek has come up with in a long time, and it really bothers me. And I know I'm nitpicking, so I'll let it go for the rest of the conversation. It's stupid. But I agree with you, Char, that this isn't, I mean, we've seen this sort of stuff before. Although the other Vulcan that's in the ship with Sarek, I guess he got the extremist stuff from Iron Man 3, where they can just blow up their body. It's a really weird way to sort of sabotage someone?
They did it for the special effects. That's really about all I could get out of that. What I don't understand is, how is racism logical?
It not only is it logical, Char, it's extreme logical.
Yeah, no, I guess, you know, I guess if you don't believe in logic, you are impure. That is the only train of thought I can possibly conjure up, and I'm so not digging that at all.
That's right. I want to see Vulcans argue. Because if you think about it, if they're all so based on logic, but isn't logic also through the lens of your own, like, experience?
Yeah, of course, everything is.
Yeah.
So you have, like, two Vulcans, and they're like, I believe we should do this. And the other one's like, I believe we should do this. And they're like A and B. How do you discern who is right if they're both theoretically applying logic? That's where, like, it kind of falls down, because logic isn't the be-all, end-all of everything.
Arguing illogical?
Yeah, at the end, they're like, this is illogical, what were you even doing?
Yeah, this is so logical, it's illogical.
I was actually, I felt relieved to see Amanda. It's good to see her presence here, even though it's very minimal. It's very minimal at this point. Again, Charlotte, you mentioned being on Vulcan, even though it was all, you know, the CG background and stuff like that, which was fine. Trying to think, other than that, I don't know. I think this person represents a tiny, tiny minority in the Vulcan society. I don't think, if I were to speculate into the future, I would say Discovery probably won't deal that much with this sort of thing. Probably it was just used as a catalyst to get Sarek out of the Vulcan peace talks so that he didn't get, you know, throat slit or abducted.
You're talking specifically about the suicide bomber guy.
Yes.
But there's a lot of other Vulcan racism going on here when we're talking, where Sarek is talking about Michael's qualifications. She's done this, she's done that. She's played by the rules. She's tried to invoke logic into her life. She's tried to be a very good Vulcan.
She even got their haircut.
They're just... No, she's human. She's not good enough.
Well, she's good enough if you only have one non-Vulcan Vulcan.
I suppose.
Remember that. And actually, you know what? This scenario, I kind of already had in my mind, but I placed the 2009 scene when Spock is standing before the Vulcan Science Academy.
Yeah. All ready to go.
It's in canon in my head, even if it wasn't part of, like, the original canon. I think that's the same kind of thing happened to Spock, the prime Spock. I think that Vulcans have always felt superior. They've always felt entitled and better than everybody else. And it makes total sense, even in prime universe, for them to, like, oh, yeah, you did great, Spock. You're welcome, even though your mom's a human. And he'd be like, you know what? I'm out. Nope.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He drops the Vulcan mic and he's gone.
It's one of the best parts of 09 for me. I love that scene so much because of how much it informs that character. So this seems par for the course. Like, Vulcans are just jerks. I mean, you're not always, obviously, but they can be very arrogant and better, holier than thou, you know, that kind of sort of thing.
Yeah, I guess that's just something I really, really, really noticed in this episode. And just, the Vulcans are supposed to at least be somewhat good guys, and yet, you know, they're being portrayed really just, as jerks. I don't like them very much right now.
Yeah, no, and, you know, I'm sure the leader of the separatist cell was like, can you regulate? And the Vulcan was like, yes, I can, little Iron Man 3. In there for you. No. Come on. I mean, we've seen this whole turning yourself into a bomb thing before, but in sci-fi in general. But yeah, no, it was these logic extremists.
Just say extremists.
You know, it. Yeah, again, we've seen a lot of this in Discovery, and I can buy that it all wouldn't have gone away with the teachings of, you know, Sarek coming out and things like that. But I don't know. It's it's almost kind of like a Vulcan first mentality where they're like, we need to
make Vulcan great again.
It is. That's exactly what it is. I mean,
we need to withdraw from the Federation.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Don't contaminate it with those human emotions.
Like, this guy is on the other side of the Nova Prime or the Terra Prime, you know, debate, really. Like, he's just the same as those people.
It's the kind of stuff that makes me think of. Yeah, absolutely. And so, I don't know, it makes me wonder, just Vulcan society in general, are more people like that? Like, is this just the way Vulcans are in general? Like, kind of like what we've been talking about. Or in general, are people a little more like Sarek, where, hey, we're in the Federation now, we're exposed to all sorts of alien races, we all have to get along with one another, let's find common ground? That's what I'd like to know now at this point. Or because we're seeing a very small segment of the Vulcan population, I guess.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing more Vulcans in the future so we can kind of get a better sense of Vulcan society, because even in TOS, we don't get a great sense. You know, we get, of course, help me with the episode when it has to go back for Ponvar.
Oh, Amok Time?
Amok Time, of course, which is the best kind of example we get. Yeah. But even then, like, even that, I feel, isn't representative of Vulcan culture as a whole. And I really appreciated Enterprise to kind of, that did dig into Vulcan culture. And it was a different time than we're at now, of course. But I like the idea that the Vulcans aren't necessarily perfect, but I don't think they're this a lot of times. So I hope that Discovery will kind of not paint them with a very broad brush here at this point. So, okay, let's see. There are a couple of other things I wanted to specifically talk about, and then we can just kind of go off here. The Disco t-shirts.
Sign me up. Where do I get those? And I have a question. If you do wear one, do you have to constantly be running while you're wearing it?
I think so. Oh, that actually reminds me. Running in the hallways. We're taught not to do that in elementary school.
Especially if the saucer is spinning.
It doesn't matter when you're an adult.
Especially if it's spinning.
It seems like a dangerous thing to do. I mean, you know, if it's just jogging...
Do they not have a gym area? I mean, they've got the simulation, like the battle simulation area. Do they not have a track they could run around in or something?
What I was thinking, if things were pretty slow, it was a pretty slow Discovery day, they could start to rotate that inner or outer ring on the Discovery, and then those people could just run on the outside and not move anywhere.
Yeah.
It'd be like a giant, treadmill, but...
I did like the shot though, as we're zooming in on the Discovery and we go in through like the window on the spoke. Like it, again, they're giving us some great shots of the outside of the ship.
Totally.
I do love that. I love when you get the sense of scale of the ship, just from seeing people in relation to the size of the ship as well.
Yeah, visually, this show does not disappoint at all. It's been amazing.
Anything else? I do nitpick on the t-shirts. I think they're silly. I don't know why they wouldn't just put Discovery. It's not like they're paying for the... Whatever. Do you guys have anything else?
I think it's a trendy thing.
Maybe it's because you can trademark Disco, but you can't trademark Discovery. I'm just guessing.
How can you trademark Disco? And second of all...
I don't know. The t-shirt has a TM on it. That's all I'm saying.
And second of all, I saw somebody had posted a picture, obviously Photoshop, but it was basically like if you were from the Enterprise, what your Disco shirt would look like, and just said Enter on the front. And I'm like, it's stupid, because why would you, like, I've asked people who've served on ships, I'm like, you know.
Enterprise wish they had their own t-shirts, okay? I'm just saying.
Hey, the Enterprise or any other Constitution-class ship is the quickest way to get from cadet to captain. So make sure you remember that, Darren. Anyways, I'm not going to get hung up on the t-shirts. I don't care that much. It's just, I just don't know why they wouldn't just put Discovery on the shirt. It's not like they're paying by letter. Just get Discovery on the whole shirt. Anyways, not a big deal.
Maybe there's some inside joke that's going on amongst the ship that we don't completely know. You know, that's why they had these ships or these shirts made up or something. I don't know. Maybe there's something, some sort of weird little tidbit we'll get later on. But of course, right now, without that knowledge, if it's going to ever come out, merchandising.
Merchandise.
That's it. That's all. Also, by the time we get to the Discovery area, the 1970s were a long time ago. A lot of people in that generation probably don't really know what disco is. So it's just a cute abbreviation.
Okay. All right. Abbreviation we've never had to do before, but okay. I'm okay with that. That's fine. That's fine. Anything else that sticks out to you guys that you wanted to talk about?
Well, the preview for next week.
Ooh. Great. Keep going. I'll let you do it because I wanted to bring this up.
Oh, well, I mean, it looks like we're going to get pretty intense here with some Mirror Universe type of stuff. And, you know, we got it teased in the previous episode, episode 5, with the whole mirror thing that this was coming. And, of course, it was given away to us online before the show even started. Thanks, Frakes. But it's going to happen, and I am also very curious because it does look pretty good. What do you think?
So it's essentially cause and effect meets the Mirror Universe, right? That's kind of what I got from it, because they're like, we're in a time loop from 30 minutes. And
yeah, but
yeah, is there something with a spore drive that opens the door to the Mirror Universe, or what? It sure seems that way.
And Harry Mudd shows up?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's true. That's true.
Okay.
I think he's the cause of it. Happened. And then Q's going to show up and be like, Harry Mudd, I've been looking for you.
Oh, man. If Q showed up in this show, all would be forgiven. I'd lose my mind. I wouldn't even be able to talk.
You know, that's just so funny. Some people would love that. And then, of course, the internet rage would just be through their Q. Can you just imagine? I mean, I'm sure I didn't see too much of it myself, honestly, but I'm sure there were a lot of people talking about the whole Katra thing where we've never seen this before. You know, this is not how Katras work. But I'm sorry, if you can have the containment of someone's life knowledge and experience and put it into somebody else's head, and that was in Star Trek 3 and that's considered just fine, well, we don't know what else Katras can do, so why not?
They called it a soul transplant or something like that in this episode.
Something. We don't completely know exactly how it works. We know very little about Katras, actually. So I can easily forgive that, but I know that there's people out there right now typing away furiously at their keyboards in some internet argument.
What did you think about the preview for next week, Darren?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, it's time travel episode. I mean, we're going to have one eventually because it's Star Trek. But yeah, I didn't necessarily get a mirror vibe from it, though. I just felt, again, like it, you know, just very much like the Groundhog's Day kind of effect where someone, apparently Stamets, realizes that they're in a time loop and every time it resets, he has to re-explain and re-get everyone on his side to fix the problem, obviously going through a couple of cycles and leading up to the destruction of the Discovery, which I'm not surprised as well because that thing looks really dangerous with the stuff they're messing with. So yeah, I mean, they could bring a mirror episode element in, but my gut's telling me it's just going to be, you know, yeah, I think the spore drive is probably going to be part of it, or if not the initial cause, probably the cause of the explosion, cause that's probably not good. I'm very excited for, I think it's a good one to give, let us kind of simmer on the interpersonal for a little bit and just kind of like let that continue to develop. More time can pass so that when we see our Admiral friend again, we can, you know, infer some more. I mean, that's what's also nice is that we're kind of jumping in spurts as far as time goes. And
it's like
if it's a 30-minute loop, we could end
like
up back to
the battle. It's like a traditional Star Trek episode, too. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, it is.
It feels... I'm most excited
it's
about
it's in the rules, Daniel. You have to have a Star Trek episode in the first season. You have to have a time travel one, or it's not Star Trek.
And that's what I'm most excited about. Like, we've gotten this, you know, quote unquote new Star Trek. It's changing up the dynamics that we're used to. It's a very different perspective than we've gotten in the past. I'm excited to say, let's just do a Star Trek staple, you know, from this perspective, and we can see, because we've seen this episode 4 or 5 times already, but this could be this episode with the Discovery twist, and this would make it, right, you know, that kind of a thing, and like, that's really exciting to me. I'm on board for it. And of course, I'm a sucker for Rainn Wilson to come back as Mudd, so I'm pretty excited about that as well.
Yeah, I'm digging his portrayal of Mudd thus far. I want to see a whole lot more of that. I want to find out how we get to the Harry Mudd we see on TOS, which is how I feel they are writing that character, which is totally cool. And I'm totally on board for this wild ride that we're going to get next week. It's going to be pretty sweet, I think, where they're just going to let loose and have a little bit of fun. It's going to be maybe a little less serious. I don't know, maybe. I could be completely wrong, too.
But use a lighter episode, I think.
Yeah, and it is going to be cool to see Discovery's take on this kind of an episode.
Yeah, I think you hit on something, Daniel, in the fact that we've seen this kind of episode before in Star Trek, and you're going to get the naysayers who are like, oh my gosh, why can't you come up with something original? Why is just like this episode and this episode and this episode? But we're not seeing these characters, our new characters, react to that situation. I don't care if it's beat for beat Clues or Message in a Bottle or Time's Arrow or whatever episode we do.
Not Time's Arrow.
Okay. Cause and Effect. Let's say it's beat for beat Cause and Effect, and the freaking Bozeman shows up again. I don't even care.
That would be if Kelsey Grammer came back.
Oh my gosh,
that'd be amazing.
I would just be like, I don't even care. You win, Star Trek. But no, and then it just turns around and goes back into it, and then it later shows up with the Discovery.
Can you imagine Kelsey Grammer in his blue Discovery uniform? That would be great. That would be really fun.
But all that to say, they could tell the exact same stories again, and that's okay. Again, we have 700-something episodes to compare this to, but us seeing Michael and Lorca and Saru and all of these new characters react to that, that's what we want to see. So I don't think anyone who naysays episodes that are similar to previous Star Trek, it's going to happen. There's so much Star Trek out there. It's a huge daunting task, especially when you're trying to keep canon. But I think I really want to see Stamets try to have to explain the time loop to Michael or Lorca or Saru. I mean, Saru could be like the Vulcan, where he's like, time travel is impossible. It's been scientifically proven or whatever. We will see.
I don't think it's so much a recycling of the episode idea. I think it's a little more of a nod to tradition, to this type of an episode.
Yeah.
Which is totally cool. Now, if they keep on doing it and doing it and doing it, which I don't think they will, that would be another thing, but one little fun romp. Of course, have at it. Let's see what you do.
Especially if they do take the opportunity to make this a fun episode.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I think, like, it would be nice to have some lightheartedness in this show for a little while.
It's been heavy.
Although we do need to get another time travel episode, maybe season 3 or so. We need to go back to the late 20th century, because there's something about that everyone's going to end up at.
Starling is at it again.
but again,
let's get some chili cheese burritos, the replicator be damned, and some Fruity Whips.
Where are we, sir? We're in 2019. Oh, what are the chances? No.
Pretty good chance, yeah. In this, in a province called Canada. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Sounds French.
The last thing I wanted to bring up before we close out here, and this is literally in podcast terms breaking news. Discovery has been renewed for season 2 as of today.
Yeah.
And we're not surprised at all.
No. But pleasantly surprised, just because, hey, we needed confirmation. It's here already. They're not even halfway through the first season. This is very good news. That's got to mean the show is doing well.
Do you know, at the very least, what this means is another whole year of Star Trek. I mean,
that too.
At the very least. And it's been so long, you know, it's like, you know, look, I love every specific thing about Discovery, but Discovery is Star Trek, and I want more.
So oh, absolutely. Yeah, you know.
As much as you can.
That's true.
Yeah, for as ambivalent and as cautiously optimistic as I went into this show, trying to go in as spoiler-free as possible, I've been so invested now by this point already getting into this story. They're doing such a good job. Give me more.
And we've been enjoying it, but yeah, there's the chance that it could have been terrible. I mean, it's not a foregone conclusion that Star Trek is going to be good. I mean, historically, that's very true. But, you know, I'm very glad for a second season. I think, I mean, even though they've already shot and put, you know, to rest all of this season so far, I'm excited that what story they're going to tell. You know, and how are they going to either continue these characters or introduce new ones? And I get the feeling they're not necessarily going, oh, well, it's Star Trek, so 7 years guaranteed, right? It's like, no, like,
yeah.
One, why would you want to? This isn't Lost. We don't need this super long mystery game for years and years and years. But still, like, we haven't seen Vok in a couple episodes. Where's he? You know, we haven't seen, you know, a lot of characters, and, you know, is Laurel still, you know, scarred on one side? You know, we need to, and there were no Klingons, that's true. Well, actually, sorry, I strike that. There were Klingons in this episode at the very end, but I'm excited for season two as we get forward. Maybe they could just put the episode titles in wording in the front.
It makes me think, too, like, obviously, unlike previous Star Treks, well, not, I shouldn't say that, but, you know, season one was kind of all they had to go on. You know, season two and beyond were not guaranteed. So I assume, and this could be wrong, but I assume that the whole Spore Drive Lorca stuff is going to be wrapped up by the end of the season. And if that's the case, one way or the other, that may make for a very interesting shift into season two.
What's the driving force of season two?
You know, whatever happens, what's going to be different about season two? Maybe the Spore Drive or Lorca or both aren't there. How do you continue that? Yeah, how do you continue that storyline? And then, of course, they also mentioned in the past, like, oh, if we do more seasons, we'll move into how this gets closer to TOS and like all this sorts of thing. I'm very excited to see all of those elements play out.
Absolutely. As Spock said, there are always possibilities, plenty of them. It's going to be very interesting to see in what direction season two goes, just because, like you said, season one is probably going to have quite a bit of wrap-up to it, just because they didn't really know how this was going to be received. Well, now we know we got a green light for season two. It's going to be a lot of changes, I'm sure. What are they going to do? How are they going to do it? How are they going to play in this universe?
Are they going to do any rewrites or reshoots for the end of this season to help, you know, transition?
I would imagine
if you bottled it up in one way,
just because they finished
shooting, go back and change it.
That would probably be way more money than they can do.
That's true.
At this point, it may not be feasible for them to even.
Well, and when do we get it?
Well, and of course, you can always jump a little bit in time and say, "Hey, this happened." Explain that away. That way, you can transition without transitioning.
Yep.
Now, did they say when it was coming out? Because I'm not guessing it's going to be December next year, because that seems like a kind of fast turnaround.
You know what stinks is I think we're going to have quite a weight on our hands, because they just greenlit the season. They're going to have to write it. They're going to have to shoot it. We're going to have post-production. It's going to be a while.
So you heard it here first, folks. Star Trek Discovery Season 2 coming 2022.
I hope we don't have to wait that long.
No,
maybe not quite that far.
We won't. We won't.
And
but
really,
to be fair,
heard it here first, Daniel. There's this thing called the internet that, like, everybody is on.
To be fair, Star Trek fans at this point are used to waiting a few years in between their entertainment. So
it's true.
I suppose we could probably handle it if we had to.
We could stomach it.
Yeah.
Barely.
Yeah. All right, well, that was episode 6, Lethe, whatever you want to say.
Lethe.
Episode 7, do we know what that's called, Darren?
It is called Magic to Make the Sanest Man Go Mad, which is not quite the longest title we've had yet, but it I can see how it's going with the time travel. I'm guessing the sanest mad go mad would be Stamets, because he seems to be the one who knows that they're in a time loop.
Although, to be fair, in this episode, he didn't seem the sanest, so we're not sure if that's the case. But
what I really am looking forward to is how they integrate that title into the script and have somebody say it.
Yes.
That's going to be fun.
Let's hope that happens.
I really want that to happen.
Yes, but it's the second longest title with 8 words, as opposed to The Butcher's Knife Cares Not for the Lamb's Cry with 9, if those of you keeping score at home.
I like the TOS throwback titles, so I hope they keep them coming. They're really fun, and they're really creative.
After
and
it's that, always, we get some Latin.
Yeah, it's always interesting to try to interpret them. So we will cover that next week. But for this week, Char, let people know where they can listen to you and how they can get a hold of you on the internet.
Sure. Well, I'm right here on the Nerd Party Network, co-hosting Punch It with Tristan Riddell. We very recently rebranded the show. We are going to focus a little more on Star Trek. The writing of Star Trek is what we focus on primarily. So we do things like rewrites. We write stories on the fly. We're going to talk about the writing. And then occasionally we'll have an away mission and talk about something else entirely. So you can hear me over there. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can hit me up on the Twitter. And my handle is OTheProfanity.
And Darren, what about you if people wanted to get a hold of you and your, let's just say, not up to your standards of disco shirt cosplay? How would they get a hold of you?
Look, okay, I put some tape with the word disco on my shirt. I didn't have time. There's no time to talk about my disco shirt. But no, they can find me on Twitter and my website, which is Dr. Sci-Fi, DrSciFi. Where they can see my other podcasts as well as my Stormtrooper blog and other mechanical creations. Char, though, I have a challenge for you and Tristan in writing. I want to hear you write a time travel episode.
Ooh.
Not only are you writing an episode, okay. You can pick the series, but where do you go and what characters are you taking out of their regular time and what shenanigans do they get into?
Okay, I'll put it into the idea bank. And if we use it, of course, we'll shout out and give you credit.
Take Janeway back to meet Michael.
That would be interesting to see them as BFFs.
Yeah, they could science it up, right?
Oh, man. Could you? No. Janeway and Stamets. Explosive.
Oh. Yeah, there you go.
Barkley and Tilly.
Oh, okay. This could be fun. Tristan better not shoot this idea down. So like, oh, time travel, too complicated. No. Now, come on. Let's do it.
Okay. And if people want to get hold of me, they could find me on Twitter at OneUpDan. That's the number one, not the word. And as I said, next week, we will be talking Discovery again. Surprise, surprise. At least until we get a little bit of a break and we move on to something else. Go ahead, Darren.
Also, if you, even though you didn't hear him today, if you wanted to listen to our other co-host, Philip Gilfus, you can find him at NC Public Servant. That's NC for not caring. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh.
He totally cares about us in Star Trek.
Why
he
you
had
rip
other,
on Philip
other
like
obligations.
Come on.
We do miss you, Philip. Maybe he'll have come through some crazy time travel shenanigans next week. As we talk about the next week's disco.
Don't say disco. Just say Discovery.
It's on my shirt. I can't help it.
You've got a problem with terms that came up this week, don't you, Daniel?
Just.
Where is that counselor?
I'm just using extreme logic to talk about my disco shirt.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I am not Philip Gilfus.
I'm Darren Moser.
Stranded here on Setting Alpha 3.
Come!